Hi, everybody. I'm Emily.
And I'm Vince.
And this is the Lighthouse Lowdown.
Emily's back.
Back and better than ever. You did a nice little solo episode.
Did you listen to it?
No, I didn't. But I'm going to. I think it'll probably be on the flight.
Yeah, I wonder if anyone listened to it.
Yeah, I know Jeremy did because he sent us an email saying congratulations on our wedding.
Oh, that's nice.
I know.
Jeremy D'Etremont.
Cool
dude.
And then I have one more episode coming out after that one, which we already recorded a while ago. So this is actually the episode after that one.
Oh, cool.
So I'm ahead.
You're ahead. Should we date where we're at right now or no?
Oh, no.
All right. It's still pre-wedding time. I'll put it that way.
I was going to say, should we date? I'm like, we're already dating. This is a date.
We're engaged, actually. That's
so
nice.
So true. So I do have a history buoy. And I mentioned it, I think, in our last episode. It's the Lighthouse Digest Doomsday List.
Doomsday List. That sounds so cool. I mean, it sounds
it's
bad.
It's foreboding,
right?
Yeah. But you know it's bad, but it's an interesting thing for a Lighthouse magazine to have. So for those of you that don't know, Lighthouse Digest is a magazine subscription that you can sign up for, which we still have it. And I wish we did. Every year I'm like, I want to sign up for this, but
we don't.
It's because for some reason I don't want to have to ever change my address on it.
Oh yeah. We're still moving around.
Yeah. And we're just not stationary yet. So yeah, but the magazine was started in 1990. So it's been around for a long time. Got lots of decades on it.
Yeah.
So the Doomsday List specifically was created in 1993, so shortly after they started the magazine. And this was to draw public attention to lighthouses that were in serious danger of being lost forever. And
yes,
obviously, the people who subscribe to this magazine are people who care about lighthouses.
So of course.
The interests overlap.
Enthusiasts.
Yeah. So the criteria for being on the list was stuff like the lighthouse is in imminent danger by erosion or structural damage, financial improbability of repair, and stuff like that. So if they don't foresee anyone being able to cover the cost of restoring it, then it'll go on the doomsday list. Even if it's like in good, even if it's still standing or still in use or whatever, then it could be on the doomsday list.
Yeah.
But yeah, the criteria for being on the list also isn't a hard line. Like, there's no way to really quantify what would put it on the doomsday list, so it's really just up to the magazine who decides.
Interesting. And I assume there's an author and editor, probably potentially the same person. Do you know?
Probably.
Like who is managing the list is what
know.
I say.
No,
so,
I don't know. The magazine.
The
History Buoy is on the list, not the magazine.
And it's the keeper's log.
Lighthouse Digest.
Man.
You didn't listen at all.
No, I wasn't. I was focused on the audio.
Keeper's log is the USLHS.
Yeah.
Quarterly newsletter.
Yes.
Which we could also cover that sometime too.
Oh my gosh. And there's also the emails they send out to their members.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen one of those in a while.
I get them.
Maybe we're due for one soon.
I get them. I also get them regarding, you know, they have a new podcast. Oh my gosh. It's the light version, LITE.
Oh yes.
So they're like shorter episodes.
Yeah. So it's like reposted but
yes,
shortened.
Yeah. Very cool.
Anyway, lighthouses that we've covered so far that were on the list and made it off are Cape Hatteras.
Nice.
It was once on Doomsday List.
Wow.
Little River, Avery Point, Chris Point, and Nauset Light.
Wow. Oh so yeah.
We've got some big names on there that have been on the list and then made it back off.
Yeah. And some are doing very well today.
Yes, exactly.
From what we know.
We know Cape Hatteras is going through a restoration for the past few years.
Yeah.
So I wonder how that's going.
It's been through several, though, because Cape Hatteras famously, it was relocated.
Yes.
In the 90s?
Yeah.
I want to say 90s or 2000s.
I think it was like late 90s.
Either way, it was very well documented. So that's worth looking up if you're interested.
Cool pictures.
They moved the whole thing.
So crazy.
Big one.
Waugashant's Lighthouse is one that we've covered that's still on the list. Mm. And yeah, that one I'm not surprised by at all, because when we covered it, there was like bricks coming out of the foundation and stuff. So like, it's definitely in danger. And I don't think anyone will take on the task of fixing it, because there, I know there's people that want to, and they're like trying to fundraise, but it's just too expensive.
Really unfortunate.
I think they said it would be like $1 million just to temporarily fix the foundation so that it could last through like a few more winters, but it's just a temporary fix. So
yeah,
it's hard to fork over that much money for something that's not even tangible.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, just speak a little bit generally, if I was thinking, man, it's too bad lighthouses are not still included in government funding a lot of times.
Yeah.
For transportation and
infrastructure.
But of course, that's not going too well either. As we sit right now, the government's been shut down for quite a while. So as an example of disagreement on funding.
Mm-hmm.
So
true. Lighthouses would be a rough one.
Yeah, they would be cut pretty fast, I think.
If they were historical. I don't know.
I know, but so are a lot of bridges. So are a lot of roads and highways. And
yeah, and they probably upkeep with those. Great. I don't know. The creation of this doomsday list, a few lighthouses have been destroyed and removed. So we have the opposite happening, where things like Cape Hatteras are success stories.
Yep.
And then we have the other side of the coin.
Sadness stories.
Sad. Green Island Lighthouse from our last episode was removed from the list, even though it's still standing due to the improbability of restoration. You know, it's the one that just had stone walls left over because it burned.
It's off in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. And the same is true with the lighthouse that we're covering today. Still continuing our Green Island series.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Another Green Island.
It's Green Island Lighthouse of Wisconsin this time. Last time was Ohio. Now we're in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
It's cheese, right?
Yes.
That's all I got.
Cheeseheads.
I've never been to Wisconsin.
I don't think I have either.
Have we covered a lighthouse in Wisconsin?
I'm not sure. One way to find out would be to go to thelighthouselowdown.com, where you can see our episodes map.
Yeah.
Which is what we're doing right now.
It looks like we have not.
Wow.
Oh, wait a minute.
I can't remember.
We've been close, because it includes, it's just shy of Duluth.
Oh, yeah. Minnesota.
So we've been really close with like Split Rock and stuff.
Yeah. Right on the border.
Let's see. So that's where we're going. We're going to Wisconsin. There's an 87-acre little half moon shaped island called Green Island in Green Bay.
Here we are.
So it's a nice little map
there
for you. So you can see
Green Island off of Marionette.
Yeah, near Marionette. I don't know how to pronounce it exactly, but there's a couple lighthouses you can see in this screenshot alone. So it's a lighthouse heavy area, and Green Island was one of them. At this point, I'll just tell you the story. So the area began to boom in lumber in like the mid-1800s.
Mm-hmm.
Huge lumber area. And Green Island was a good spot for a lighthouse because it had shoals that extended out from like into the bay. So it was kind of a danger area that needed to be marked anyway, besides all the traffic that was coming in. And so in 1859, Congress appropriated $6,000 for a lighthouse here. And they placed 5 stone monoliths. I wish we had like a picture, but you know, mid-1800s, that were placed on the island to mark off just under 2 acres of the island to purchase from Peter McBride, who owned the island. And I found out owned lots of islands around that time.
Peter McBride.
Yeah.
Do we know that name?
I don't know.
Might be new.
I think so.
Green Bay wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt.
Yeah. He owned lots of lots of islands around like the Great Lakes and stuff. So he was paid $39.97 for this land, which, by the way, is about $1,500 today. I'm like,
it's a good deal.
What do you mean?
For the government. Eminent. Is this an eminent domain case?
I don't know.
Because that's not a lot of money to take over.
It's terrible.
Yeah. It's not
2 acres. Think about and that's today's money, $1,500. It for 2 acres today. They're selling lots for houses that are like 0.15 acres for like 200 something.
Bo, you can't. For everyone listening, Bo the black cat is on Emily's lap, and he's pawing at both the microphone cord and the laptop controlling the notes.
He's like, here, he's let like, me help. No, here.
I know the real estate prices in this area.
He's like, hurry up. Let me go to the next page. You're spending too much time here. So cute. Yeah, he's a little bit distracting, but I really enjoy having something to clutch while I'm talking. I like to clutch his armpit.
Emily and I, we have two cats. This is Bo, the black cat, and then we have Joey, the orange cat.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, it was Halloween. It was their day.
Yeah.
But now they're retired.
Yep. Now it's fall. And off they're season. Like, yeah. They're coming back down off of their high, their Halloween high.
Mm.
But black cat is a yearly season.
Sure.
Where was I? Okay. So they built the lighthouse, appropriated the money,
yes.
Bought the land.
Yes.
Built the lighthouse. And it was an integral tower on a 2.5-story brick dwelling with the square tower coming out of the south end of like a very pitched roof. If you want to click next
slide. Oh, yes, such a nice photo.
It's very fancy. They
have 2.5-story.
Yeah. That's probably like the attic is probably like one room or something.
Could be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Adjacent to the tower.
Was pretty common. To do something with that extra space.
I sure do love integral towers.
Mm-hmm. They're very nice.
If anyone doesn't know, that's where the lighthouse tower is actually built into the house that the keeper or assistant keepers and families live in.
Yeah. So it's like you built a house and then you stuck a lighthouse on top.
There was a time, I think you showed me the first integral tower that we talked about. I can't remember which one that would have been. And I was like, what? Like, I was like, oh, you could just... Why didn't I think that was a possibility? Yeah. I've always thought of lighthouses as standalone structures.
Like it needs to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if it has like
beautiful houses,
it does need to be structurally sound because the lantern room is usually pretty heavy.
Yes.
Like with the lens and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So
you wouldn't want that thing to fall down.
This one never had anything more than a fourth order though. So not super heavy.
Sure.
We're not talking like first order integral. That would be crazy.
Yeah. It's beautiful though.
I wonder if that's a thing.
Very symmetrical.
But the light had a focal plane of 55 feet from a fixed white fourth order Fresnel lens. So we got one right off the bat. Other buildings on the station included a summer kitchen, which I don't know what that is. Mm. Summer kitchen. Is it like you don't want to heat up the house so then you cook elsewhere?
Could be. Yeah, like a smokehouse.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd like to learn more about that. A workshop, a boathouse, a privy. And an oil house.
Got to have a privy.
Which you can see a couple in the photo that I have pulled up. And so when they were finished, a notice to mariners were sent out. We talked about that recently. Mm-hmm. Exciting. Yep. That the light would be lit October 1st, 1863. And awesome. The first keeper was Samuel P. Drew, who had his seventh child with his wife Mary in 1864 at the station. And then another in 1869, though she passed away shortly after that, like 3 months into infancy.
Dang.
And her gravestone is actually marked at the station.
8 kids.
So you can see like her grave stays there. So
that's nice.
Yeah. And it comes back up later, like in modern times, but I'll tell you a little more about it.
Okay.
Yeah. In 1864, Drew replaced the issued lard oil lamp with a kerosene lamp just of his own volition.
Wow.
And so eventually he attempted to blow out the flame through the glass chimney in the light. And instead of going out, it exploded.
Oh, no. Hold on. What? So this is after he replaced it with a kerosene lamp.
Yes. Now it's like a kerosene lamp. And I wonder if it's just like he's not trained in it or like the inside the lens did something. Or,
shoot.
So I don't know.
Somehow he ignited a fire and exploded?
Exploded. So Drew was lit aflame.
Oh, no.
And running down the lighthouse. And while he was rushing, there was a second explosion, which severely damaged the lens and the lantern room. So something crazy happened. I don't know. Maybe when he blew the flame, it went down into the oil
to a bath.
Reservoir. Yeah. Yeah.
Damn. And he had 8 kids.
Yeah. I mean, everyone was fine. He ended up being cool. Nobody was fired.
He wasn't covered in flames.
He was caught aflame, but I think it was like his clothes, you know, stop, drop, and roll kind of action.
Yes, yeah.
You know, people can be all right after that. So they built a temporary light while the original was being repaired, and Samuel kept his post, so he didn't get fired for any of that.
Well, he was fired, but...
Ha! He, like, fake laughed extra long to find the button.
That's right, I gotta find the button.
Oh, that's funny. His eldest daughter, Helen, was assistant keeper from 1867 through 1870. So for 3 years, she was officially assistant keeper. We love to see that.
Mm-hmm.
1871, in October, a fire broke out in the town of Peshtigo. I don't know if I said
Just say it boldly. I believe
Peshtigo.
Yeah.
Called the Great Peshtigo Fire.
And slide. Oh, no.
I know. It was huge. It burned 1.2 million acres. And a lot of this was like the logging industry. So they took a huge hit.
Shoot.
Like I can't remember what the financial repercussions of this was in today's money, but it was like hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah. I mean, there's places in the fire called Sugarbush, upper, middle, and lower Sugarbush, Birch Creek.
Yeah.
I'm looking for like a stack of timber, Wisconsin, and a matchbox, Wyoming. Somehow Wyoming's in there. All right. Keep going. Sorry.
And then Door County, which is that...
Michigan? Oh, across the river.
Yes, across the bay.
Green Bay. The river.
Also burned from what I read was actually a separate fire at the time, at the exact same time. There was another fire that was not... Like people say that this fire jumped the bay, but I read that that's actually not true. And it's like...
Originated down here in Palmer, is that what that says?
Yeah. New Franken.
Franken. I saw the word new and I thought it was Palmer, and I'm wearing my glasses. So that's where we're
at. A little blurry, so I can give you some credit there.
Interesting painting, though, also on this slide.
Oh, yeah. I picked the worst one, like most dramatic.
Yeah.
Looks like they're in hell, sort of thing.
Looks rough.
Yeah. I read a lot of terrible stories. It was like there was this one guy who like slit all the throats of his children instead of having them burned to death. Like people couldn't escape, kind of thing.
Yeah. And he survived.
Yeah. Or at least somebody survived that was there. Oh, terrible.
Gosh.
I would never. I'm sorry. It's like, I want to save you, but like, I'm going to die trying instead of just like taking you out myself. Also, slitting the throat is not exactly a pleasant way to go. It's not like, oh, here, I'll save you from having to suffer. It's like,
no,
well,
that's not good.
No.
I mean, it's with the tools of the time. Anyways.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a movie, Stephen King. It was a book, I believe. I think it was a Stephen King book called The Mist.
Oh, I haven't read that one.
Well, there's a film that was made about it.
Oh.
And the main actor is a man. You know, he's the tough main character. And at the end of the film, spoiler, they're in a car and they're in the mist and they're going to die inevitably.
Yeah.
And so he has a gun and he shoots everyone in the car.
Oh.
But he doesn't have a bullet for himself.
Oh, no.
So it's like a selfless act of like saving them from this terrible fate.
Yeah.
And then like immediately afterwards, there's like savior that arrives.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, it's terrible.
So that's what I was thinking of when you're like, yeah, this guy. Also, I don't mean to make light of this because I know this is a real story. But awful.
Yeah.
Absolutely awful.
But yeah, I mean, from the picture alone, you can see how intense the fire was. And I think that a lot of people jumped into the river and like the bay and stuff to save themselves. But it was October. So a lot of people died from hypothermia after that.
Damn.
I know. What are the odds?
1800s.
I'm very unfortunate.
Do you know when the Great Chicago Fire was? Was it? I think it was 1800s also.
It's may have been the... I read that this fire was at the same time as another huge fire. And so then this one kind of died...
In popularity? Like, or in...
But I know what you mean.
In news spread?
Yes, because there was something else that was bigger. Even though more people died in this fire than whatever that fire was. Here, let me look it up.
I'm curious about that timing.
Yes, same year. Great Chicago Fire. Okay, so...
Rough year for fire.
Yeah, it's probably because of... It was probably more building damage, and that's why it got more...
Right in the city. Yeah. Damn.
I think more people died. Oh, yeah. This says fire killed approximately 300 people in Great Chicago Fire, and I know that this one killed at least 2,000 people.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. It's really terrible.
Huge area.
So, humongous fire. Drew and the oldest children worked to put out any fires that started on the island, because if you can see, the fire's on both sides of where this
origination on both sides too.
Yeah. And there was, so there's all these airborne sparks and like ash coming down on the lighthouse. So they were like putting out little roofs, roof fires and like on the island and everything. And then Mary kept the light burning and watched the younger children the entire time. But they succeeded in protecting the lighthouse, so it didn't burn. So that's one big win.
That's huge. Maybe you're going to cover it. I wonder what the area was like recovering from this fire. You know, if the lighthouse was otherwise a refuge for anybody. It's terrible.
Yeah, I don't know. It's too far to swim to this island. I can't remember exactly how many miles off the shore it is. I thought it was like 5 miles off.
I bet if there's any boats that were used to try to evacuate the fire.
To save people.
Dang.
Big fires are always like a sad thing to see in history in somebody's, like in a town or whatever.
Yeah. Fires and hurricanes are like the two, especially historically when they didn't have forecasting.
Yeah.
The two like urgent, widespread disasters that often, in stories at least, happen to lighthouses.
Yeah.
Speaking of hurricanes, there's hurricanes going on right now in the Caribbean.
Yeah, that Cat 5 in Jamaica.
So, let's see. Hopefully there's no new news on lighthouses and otherwise. But
I didn't even think about checking in on that.
Yeah. It's
luckily,
not really what we do here, but
yeah, it's,
we hear a lot of the news.
It's relevant. What is it called when two...
Intersection.
Yes.
Crossover.
The intersection.
Venn diagram.
1876, the Lighthouse Board suggested more of the island be purchased to make it easier to reach the light station. So apparently, maybe it's like from another side of the island or something. They
dock
wanted to,
access or something. Yeah.
To where the keepers and anyone else usually travels. So they purchased 0.79 acres from Samuel and Mary Drew, who for $150, by the way. So we got a little bit more. A little bit more than
$150.
But these two, it's the keeper and his wife. They owned much of the island because they had a big garden and were raising livestock. Mm-hmm. And one summer they sold 87 bushels of strawberries.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So they had like an actual...
That's an incredible yield of strawberries.
An actual operation going on. So they owned most of the island. So the Congress paid them for the land for the lighthouse. So... kind of neat.
But they're eating a lot of strawberries.
Yeah. So much jam. This bit of land that they bought would be the location of the new boathouse. Because I think something happened with the other boathouse. Like the water level changed. Mm. Oh no, I'm thinking of the well. There was a well that, and the water level changed so much that they had to dig a new one.
Yeah.
Which maybe is common on water on the side. It's a great lake. So a lot of fresh water available.
I hadn't thought about that. I would think on an island, your well depth would be very
shallow. Yeah.
Whatever the water line would be. And then the water would be filtered by the island to get to your well.
Sand and stuff.
So, I don't know.
Samuel Drew was moved to Menominee. I know I'm supposed to say it confidently, but it's impossible. Menominee Pierhead Light in 1881. But by 1903, his son Frank was assistant keeper at... Green Island Light again. So
let's go.
A lot of his sons went into the same career path as he had.
Tradesman.
Mm-hmm. 1909, Frank was promoted to head keeper at Green Island. And his older brother, George, was assistant. So they were like a little team. They had an excellent track record for saving people as well. So there's like this whole list of all the people that they saved or, you know, all the assistance they gave to people in the bay.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Frank Drew retired in 1929 and unexpectedly passed away 2 years later from heart failure. But the Coast Guard has honored, and I'll do a history buoy on this, honored some of the most extinguished. That's right, right?
Extinguished.
Maybe since we just talked about fire.
Distinguished? Yeah. Extinguish a fire.
That's what I was like, that's not the right word.
You got me though. I was like, yeah, that's absolutely it.
That's totally right.
I am extinguished in my field.
The distinguished keepers by naming buoy tenders after them. Like
oh,
boats.
Cool. Yeah.
So I'll cover that later, but Frank Drew was one of the people that they named a buoy tender after because he was so exemplary at being a lighthouse keeper.
And Frank was the son of
the original
Samuel Drew.
Yeah. He was the first keeper, stayed for a long time, and then his sons eventually.
And quick quiz. Mom died, unfortunately, after the last baby was born.
No, the baby died.
Oh, the baby died. Yeah. Okay. I thought mother died.
Mary stuck around. I think Anna Drew was the name of the baby that passed away.
Did they have other daughters? Do you know? Or were they all? They didn't have all boys. Okay.
The eldest daughter, Helen, was.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
But there's, I mean, there was eight kids. So yeah. Seven, eight.
I was counting a lot of things going.
Yeah. It sounded like there was a pretty even split. So, but I don't know that for sure. 1930, the lighthouse suffered another huge explosion.
Oh, no.
Blowing off doors and windows. And they figured out, I don't know what happened. The current keeper was saying that it was a malicious attack. Somebody put a bomb in the lighthouse. Some fishermen were angry about something. And he was like, oh, they did this. And then, you know, obviously they did an investigation and it was the gas stove malfunctioned and blew up.
So he was kind of on the edge.
There was something going on.
He was disagreeing with the fishermen so strongly that he wanted thought to they blame would bomb them.
Thought that they would plant a bomb in the lighthouse. So I don't know. Nobody was hurt, but they did. They were like blasted back like 50 feet from the lighthouse.
Jeez.
So, but there was only like minor injuries. I was like, thank goodness.
That's crazy.
Thank goodness for all that sand. 1933, the Green Island Lighthouse was automated and the light was transferred to a skeletal 65-foot tower in 1956.
Early.
Which is still standing and functioning today. So
okay. The
skeletal one is good. Green Island is not. The following year, the Rowan Steamship Company had acquired the entire island, which was, I can't remember. I didn't make a note of what this company was, but apparently they were well respected, a large company of something. I don't remember.
Shipping steamships, probably.
Yeah, probably. A shipping company. I don't know. But the lighthouse had been abandoned since 1956, so only some of the walls remained, just like stone walls. But in 2011, the Rowan Company announced a proposed $90 million development on the island, which would be called Anna's Vineyard on Green Island in honor of Anna H. Drew, who is buried on the island.
Yeah.
And this would include condos and a marina. Is it marina?
Yeah.
Along with rebuilding the lighthouse. So like
$90 million.
Yeah.
This is a small island.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's only 87 acres, I said.
So they're going to make, this is the shipping company still owns this? And they're going to make it like a tourist.
Like a tourist stop. They're like, this is your oasis away. Yeah, like 5 miles off the coast. Come and.
I think I'm interested in this.
Have a little condo.
I think I like this.
And they said that they would have ferry service to the island that would be provided from both Marinette and Sturgeon Bay. So like on either side. But I found the island on privateislandsonline.com for sale, price by request only. So it appears that this promise from 2011 has fallen through completely. So no work has been done on this island at all.
Oh, no.
Empty promises.
90 million to zero is a jump.
Yeah.
Is the company still around? Did you look them up at all?
Yeah, I think now it's called Rowan Salvage Company. I'm not really sure.
I don't know.
But it was pretty sad.
I bet there's some backstory there.
Yeah, it says 2011 they made this big announcement, and then I'm like looking around and I'm like, oh, nothing ever happened. So then through searching, I was able to find that the island is for sale. So if anybody wants to buy this island and do something else with it, the notes are kind of interesting to read. I put the link to the private island listing in our show notes. So if you guys want to go check it out, there's a bunch of information about the island itself. Tiny little blurb about how the lighthouse is in ruins and not worth anything. Yeah. I was like, no. They're like, there is an old lighthouse on the island which provides no anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't provide anything.
Well, I don't know if this is a fair line to draw. This is a real question, but like Mackinac Island.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. It said it would be Green Bay's Mackinac Island.
Yeah, which is like, I'm still learning about it, but it's famously, it's got several places to stay. Mm-hmm. It's got no vehicles. Everything is like walking or horse-drawn or bicycle.
Yeah.
And it's a, in the U.S. tourist destination, probably, I would guess, mostly for U.S. folks.
Yeah.
But I wonder if there's not an opportunity there.
It could be something.
I don't think Mackinac Island is cheap.
No, it's not. I've heard it's like very expensive.
So I would suppose that that expense is profitable to whoever is owning those things.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And that's what they were pushing a lot on this private island website.
Yeah.
It's just like, this could be like a big, they were talking about how many people move through this area and how much revenue it generates and stuff like that. So,
oh, show
you, what remains of the lighthouse. It's very sad.
There's not much there.
It's considered ruins now at this point, and has been removed from the doomsday list because it's considered unsalvageable. So very sad.
Sad.
Oh, I cut it off in the picture, but in the front of this second photo, you can see the skeletal, the bottom of the skeletal tower, which is still lit. And it mentions it in the private island website too. Like, this is government property, but the rest of it's going to be what you purchase.
Yeah.
So sad.
Shame.
I know. But that's another one on our Green Island series.
Yeah.
Yay. I promise the next one I cover is not on the doomsday list.
Well,
so I did two sad ones. We're going to have a good one next. Yeah.
Green Island. Another one we learned that there's a ton of is Snake Island. There's several.
Oh, yes.
We covered two, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think there was
more. A ton of Snake Island.
It's just hard to.
And it's one of our biggest hits on YouTube still. Snake Island, Brazil.
So interesting that that would blow up.
I have an idea. If anyone wants to develop this land, they can use my idea for free.
Wow.
Our company where we work has a headquarters that was built on the property that previously housed a religious center of some type.
Oh.
I think it was a synagogue. I'm unsure exactly.
Okay.
But the countertops, when you and I were on the phone the other day, I was in a conference room, and I noticed every conference room has this little plaque. The countertops in the conference rooms, which are nice white stone, were salvaged from the building material of that
synagogue. No way.
And so it's like there's a plaque like acknowledging, like, you know, these are,
this is what it's from.
Yeah, to something like to honor the building that stood on this property before, and that gave a short history of it.
Interesting.
So there's enough stone here left.
You can use it for something.
Build it something and say, this is the old lighthouse, integral house and tower.
Mm-hmm.
Now making up the bar top.
Yeah.
At Hurricanes. Jimmy bar Buffett.
Bar top at Hurricanes. Margaritaville.
Margaritaville, Wisconsin.
That's hilarious.
I'm just putting it out there.
Sad.
Free to use that idea. I'm sure that would upset someone, and someone else would be like,
oh, yeah,
that's,
it would be me.
Somebody else would be like, yeah.
But don't put your drinks down on these bricks. So that's Green Island of Wisconsin, and we'll continue on with our series in our next episode. So
I would like to say thank you for coming back.
Oh.
It's good to have you back.
What do you mean, like, I was going to stay away?
Well, I don't know.
This is
tough.
My podcast.
Things are challenging right now.
Yeah,
we got like 10 hours of sleep last night, which was deeply restorative.
Glorious.
But there's not been a lot of extra sleep going on. And anyway, so our listeners who are sticking through us through this time, thank you all.
Thank you.
And Emily, of course, thank you for coming back. If you do get a chance to listen to the Edmund Fitzgerald coverage of the last episode.
Not the last, remember?
Well, the last one that I recorded.
Oh, yeah.
Chronologically in real life. That one, for me, was pretty tough. And you're going to hear lots of times when I would rely on you, and it's just me.
So, what do you mean rely on me? Like for commentary?
Like I made a comment at the beginning. Like you're going to hear me drink coffee, or if I have to sneeze, or if I have to read something.
Yeah, because I didn't edit. I didn't really edit all that much.
No cutting on that one. And,
there was one part where I had to splice together where you stopped talking for a little bit.
Yes.
So that was basically it.
I went away to try to fix a door.
It was chaos. It was my bridal shower.
Yeah.
The door hinge exploded, screws everywhere, and it was crazy.
So anyways, if you guys are interested, that's out there. YouTube is behind right now. Hopefully I'll catch it up.
Okay.
But
I'm trying really hard not to get behind on our episodes, but with our wedding coming up in December, there's a chance of there being some delays.
Yeah.
We've never once been late, so I'm trying so hard to keep that true.
Yeah. Our listeners they'll stick with us.
Yeah.
So thank you guys. That's all I had to say. I appreciate you.
Excellent. And thank you all for hopping in. You can check out our website, thelighthouselowdown.com, where you can leave a review, listen to our episodes, see our episode map or our YouTube videos. And We'll catch you next time on The Lighthouse Lowdown.
Oh, yeah, it's the weekend. It's the weekend. It's the weekend. It's the weekend.